Brock Purdy got paid last week. Brock Purdy's getting $53 million a year on a five-year deal from the San Francisco 49ers. I read a story about Purdy this week. I didn't realize his family went through a lot of financial strife after the subprime mortgage crash back in 2008. It was a story about like kind of his, like, you know, his upbringing, and nobody recruited him out of high school, and you know, his goal was to get a scholarship. His family was going through a lot of financial hardship. And
did his parents have a bunch of condos in Florida?
I don't know what they had, but they took it on the chin in that, it, like, to the point where he's like, man, I look back now and think about some of the conversations my parents were having that he was privy to and didn't totally understand them. And they moved a lot for a few years, you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, anyway, it was interesting. Obviously, he's come through that, and the family now has more money than they know what to do with based on his contract. I just found it interesting. You know, he's a guy he got his offer from Iowa State very late in the process. Alabama jumped in on him late in the process, but it was as a preferred walk-on, not as a scholarship guy. And he gets to Iowa State, and immediately he gets on campus and he's tearing it up as a freshman. And he was great for 4 years there, and yet here comes the NFL, the next group, not to believe in him. And he's the, you know, he's Mr. Irrelevant, talked about his draft party and things like that. It was a real, I came away from that story really liking Brock Purdy.
I think the big difference between Brock Purdy's contract and guys like Trevor Lawrence is that Trevor Lawrence got $142 million guaranteed at signing, whereas Brock Purdy got $100 million guaranteed at signing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right around the same category as Jordan Love, Tua Tagovailoa, Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Like the Trevor Lawrence contract for guys that haven't genuinely really establish themselves, I'd say that's the high watermark.
Yeah.
That, I mean, he got way more guaranteed money, has the same average per year as Joe Burrow, and got paid a lot like a made man. Whereas a lot of the other guys where you still have question marks about him after 3 years, they're not, the organization is still hedging a little bit.
Yeah.
They did it with Kyler Murray. You know, Kyler Murray got $100 million guaranteed.
Yep.
So Trevor Lawrence, for a guy that hasn't accomplished anything, Trevor Lawrence is probably the starting spot for CJ Stroud before they, I don't think they would take anything less than Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Contract.
Yeah. I don't think so either. Here was Brock Purdy. So Brock gets $53 million. I thought this was interesting, and it did make me think about CJ. This was Brock Purdy, did a press conference earlier this week or maybe late last week after signing his extension.
For me, with what I've done and everything, I could hang my hat on the fact that, you know, I've had success in this league, and I'm capable of leading an organization all the way to the end, the Super Bowl. I proved that. And so for me, it's, I know who I am, and I'm going to, you know, obviously want to get what I deserve, but also surround myself, like I said, with guys around me and not just try to take every penny for myself. That's the whole point of negotiating. You know, you go throughout that, you try to meet in the middle ground, and where we ended, man, I'm extremely grateful and happy with.
Okay, that may be a little overblown. I'm trying to leave money for other guys. You still got $53 million. Like, Brady used to take massive pay cuts compared to what he could have gotten. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, versus what it was against the cap. So that's all well and good. It does make me wonder, like, is there going to be any element of C.J. Stroud? I think we see Pat Mahomes do this. You never see Mahomes' dollar amount average annual value. He's off the grid every year. He's not in the top 10, I don't think. He's in the 40s somewhere. That's material. When you start talking about giving up 10 or 15, you know, $20 million compared to what you could get. I mean, Patrick Mahomes should be the highest paid quarterback in the sport based on accomplishment and what that team does every year. And he's never even close.
He's 15th.
Yeah.
15th in average per year. Well, tied for 14th with Kirk Cousins. He and Kirk Cousins are both making $45 million a year.
Yeah, and I don't look at those two the same at all. you know, like, he's making the same as Kirk Cousins. I think Purdy saying, like, yeah, I didn't want to take every penny, blah, blah, blah. Well, we don't know. If you had held out for $60 million, would you have gotten it? I do think that if C.J. Stroud has a big year, he is going to be a guy who can reset the market. He plays for a team that is willing to reset markets. We've seen this already.
Right. I don't think it's just like it was with Deshaun Watson when he got his first extension. Remember, if you're inclined to think, oh no, CJ Stroud's agent is David Mulligetta, who gets these huge deals for everybody. Right. He worked with the Texans to get Deshaun Watson a deal that Deshaun immediately tried to bail out of 6 months later.
Yeah.
Not even 6 months. 4 months later.
Whatever it was.
It was like
signed
August.
Signed in September. Signed at Labor Day weekend. and then try to get out of it in early January. So, yeah, 4 months.
Yeah, 4 months later.
Four months, yeah.
So I don't worry about Mulligetta, and I don't worry about the Texans' willingness to spend. I think one thing about the Texans giving up all this guaranteed money, if it helps you feel better or more secure as a fan, is that the difference between the haves and the have-nots in football isn't nearly as big as it is in baseball. Right. But in football, one thing that limits the teams that are more cash poor is that when you guarantee a contract, you have to put that amount that's guaranteed in escrow. So you got to have big loads of cash just sitting around gaining minimal interest well through the entire duration of that contract. And it's a lot easier for the cash rich teams to do it.
Well, and that's which broaches a whole nother topic, which is that Roger Goodell at the meetings, the league meetings last week, the same meetings where they voted down the tush push, Goodell did a press conference and was alluding to the collective bargaining agreement that's going to be coming up in a few years. Because the big things that people are wondering about with that are, is the schedule going to go to 18 games? And are there going to be 16 international games a year? Obviously, right now, the schedule is 17 games in the regular season. And the max that you can have international games is 10 games, according to the CBA. So if they want to do an 18-game season or do more international games or both,
Yeah. They've
got to reopen the CBA. The CBA is not set to expire for like another 5 years. But if they reopen that CBA, Goodell didn't even want to talk about the schedule. He's like, well, this is the quote. We did spend time today talking at length about areas of our collective bargaining agreement that we want to focus on. The two areas that we spent time on were really the cap system itself, the integrity of that system, how it's working, where do we need to address that in the context of collective bargaining when that does happen. It was a very lengthy discussion. And I think there is... Seth, I think there is a haves and have-nots thing going on in the NFL, not just with what your escrow thing is a perfect example of that, but these, not to get too cap nerdy, but like these voidable years that teams are using to shove, pay players actual money, but kick the can way down the road on the cap stuff because they can afford to pay the cash now, but the cap is the cap for everybody. Well, we'll just use these voidable years and park this money in the future, and we don't really care about that. There, it reaches a point where there's only certain teams that can do that to a massive extent. Like the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Nobody is doing that method more than the Eagles. The Eagles have like hundreds of millions in cap credit card sitting out there right now that they've paid out to players in cash already. You know,
I think part of it too is I mean, the league has changed so much in the last 20 years in terms of the money involved. And I think some of this stuff is a holdover from back in the days when sports leagues had to worry about one of their franchises becoming financially insolvent, because it's a really bad look for the league if a couple of teams go bankrupt. So some of these are protective measures to protect owners from themselves, but it's gotten to a point now where, the really rich teams, if they're savvy enough, can use it as a big advantage.
Yes.
But they also still worry about some of the small market teams. If they really botch it, okay, all of a sudden we've got a guy selling under duress. That's not good for the value of the franchises.
No.
So, I don't know. It gets into the weeds in a lot of ways, and yet I guess the sum total of it is, if you're a Texans fan, the Texans are not hurting for cash.
No.
Like they're competing in that league where the actual cash amount of any given deal isn't holding them down at all.
Yeah. I thought about this the other day. You're right. No, the Texans are a have. They're not a have not. I thought about this the other day. Someone was suggesting doing away with the salary cap altogether in the NFL, which I don't think will ever happen. But if you did away with it altogether, what type of team would the Texans be? You know what I mean? Would they be...
Like, who would they load up on?
Would they be a team... Like, in baseball, it's easier to ascertain this because the competitive balance tax is not like the NFL salary cap. Would they be the equivalent in football of, like, the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets? Or would they be more maybe like the Astros, which is that next tier... You know,
it would get really interesting because it's in baseball, the TV deals are so much different.
Yeah.
So the teams, those New York teams that have these big TV deals, they make so much more. They make 50% more than the other high earners in the league because their baseball or their TV money is so big.
Yep.
Football, you don't have that as much.
You don't have it at all with the TV stuff.
And
to me, the difference in football is where does your owner come from? Like Josh Harris in Washington runs a hedge fund, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like how much of their own money are they willing to dip into to do that?
Which is what I'm saying. Like the difference between, you don't have as much of the disparity financially, but you still do have a disparity in terms of just, yeah, teams with operating capital and what's their appetite for risk.
Yeah.
I could see the Texans. I think Nick uses a lot of voidable years. He's not afraid to push things off into the future. I think he would be a team. The real question is, okay, are you going to be a team that plunks down a 10-year contract? Like, whatever the equivalent is in football. In football, you're not going to get long-term contracts like that. I think you're going to get teams that are aggressively pushing money off into the future.
Yeah.
It feels like Nick would be, like, above average in aggressiveness with that, but not to the point where, like, he very much tries to keep the long-term in mind. So he wouldn't backload a boatload of contracts.
Yeah, I'm wondering, to me, it's more about ownership. If we're talking about a world where there's no cap, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just you spend what you spend. To me, I think the McNairs would go to the end of their wherewithal to put a competitive football team on the field. The question is the end of their wherewithal the same as it is for Josh Harris of Washington or Jerry Jones in Dallas? You know, because that's what, when there's no salary cap, then it's purely based on the willingness of owners to spend money.
It'll never happen in the NFL. But the Mets are the cautionary tale. Yeah. You've got an owner he's one of the richest men in the world.
Yeah.
And
you can mess up.
He's not looking for the return on investment in any specific deal. He just wants to spend it's almost his personal plaything.
Yeah.
And that's why the owners will never allow it.
I'm not sitting here saying there's a chance of it happening. I'm living in a fantasy world and wondering if it were to be that way, what mentality do the Texans have? And I think the Texans have a mentality at the ownership level that will do whatever it takes to win within their means to be able to do that. The salary cap is the great equalizer for everybody and all that.
Where the extra revenue comes in football, where you're not getting huge lopsided TV deals, but just the actual attendance itself.
Yeah.
And the stadium and everything else, that's where that comes into it. Like, ultimately the competitive advantage that if you're a fan and you talk about, okay, should this team build a new stadium? The cold, hard truth of the matter is that, yeah, they can be a more competitive team in the NFL if they're cash rich.
That's right.
And it's not as lopsided a difference as it is in baseball. But, yeah, you do get a competitive advantage by being rich.
Florio thinks that there is a big fight coming between the players and the owners as far as the split in revenue, which I think is right around 50-50 right now. That there seems to be a sentiment. He's basing it totally on just reading into Goodell's statement and what he's saying. But Florio reads into, and Florio always reads into pretty much everything with what the most sensational angle could be on it. But it's interesting to think about, which is, all right, we're making way more money now than we ever made as a league. Like, the media rights are growing exponentially. Are the players making a little too much of this pie right now?
Oh, they're going that route.
Yeah. That's what Florio thinks.
As a player, I'd say, look, your fixed costs don't seem all that much different. And if the margins are increasing, then I feel like that you don't have to cover your nut with as a large percentage of the total revenue.
Yeah.
I'm on to you, NFL owners.
The problem...
I've poured over P&Ls all day long before, all right?
And well, as Mike Florio points out, that when it comes to the major sports and the collective bargaining, the sport that caves the quickest has historically been the NFL.
Yeah.
The union.
Oh, and the owners had a brilliant tactic the last time around. They appealed to the lower and middle class players.
Yeah.
They said, hey, the vast majority of guys in the NFL are guys that are only going to be playing a few years. We'll give them as many benefits as possible for the blue collar dudes, and all we need is their votes. And that's the way it worked out. Yeah. They appealed to the mat. They became populists, and it worked. They weren't trying to kowtow to the superstars of the league. They're saying, "Hey, listen, hey, journeyman offensive lineman that's been on 5 teams in the last 4 years, your vote counts just as much as the superstar quarterback."
Dude, yeah, it's. Dissension among the ranks, man. That's what they created. Dissension among the ranks. Someone says on the text page, this is 2541, read an article where Purdy, after accounting for taxes, will actually take home less than 50% of his salary. That happens with every player that signs a big deal in California. We get the graphic. Steph Curry signs max deal. You know, he's really only he signs a max deal for $48 million a year, blah, 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 blah. At the end of the day, he takes home $22 million. You know?
And that ultimately yields a Draymond Green on a podcast talking about how it's set up for NBA players to not get rich. he cited, as his evidence, California state income tax. Yes. Remember, this is the league doing to them. And the fact that he's been fined more than any other human being, maybe in the history of sports. So that, yeah, like somehow that's all aligned against NBA players in general and not just the tax code of the state you play in and the fact that you individually have got. And if Draymond Green isn't rich, Sean, after just because he's been fined that much, then the problem's not with Draymond. The problem's not with the NBA.
No, that's a Draymond Green problem. No, no. And Draymond's going to wind up on TV. That's the scary thing. After all this, he's going to wind up on TV saying dumb stuff like that. Imagine every team in the AFC South making the playoffs, LOL, and 64 teams is wild. I can hear O'Brien explaining how hard it is to win in college football when 64 teams, that's from Derwin, making the playoffs. He would make it under that scenario. I mean, the Boston College, they won like 5 games last year. You'd make a 64-team tournament.
They'd play the play-in game to a 64-game tournament. And Bill O'Brien would be raising the banners. And what an achievement they've accomplished.
Yeah. Someone's wagging a finger at you and I, Seth, here on the text page.
What'd we do?
Well, this is talking about you and I complaining about how opaque the Astros are with the injury news. Yeah. The media gets like this because teams that owe y'all nothing make y'all's jobs harder. Be like Berman and McLean used to be and get you some sources or move on. Sorry, sir.
What's up with this y'all talk? Yeah. I was pretty much defending Chandler Roman.
You were. Yep.
You know what? There used to be a day in the time in this country when texters wouldn't just randomly assume that both co-hosts are saying the exact same thing.
That's right.
Maybe put your listening ears on, fella.
Or move on.
I do think it is. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think people really care that much about it. It ends up becoming a grudge match between the media that covers the team and the team itself. And sometimes people in sports media have a hard time realizing that, okay, their interests aren't quite the same as the fans at large.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Boy, you attached the three words or move on at the end of a text. That's a pretty good finisher right there. I'm going to start attaching that to the end of things or move on. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. All right, ESPN, Dan Graziano just dropped.
Hey, and by the way, news alert and news flash. All right, a lot of people that have those great sources are when the team is hand delivering news to guys themselves.
Yes.
So like that's a little bit more of why potentially the beat writers might be more peeved than others, because there's other situations where the team will, you know, hand deliver certain little juicy nuggets themselves to the beat writers.
Do the Texans have one of the biggest question mark jobs in the league? And is the league short selling the Texans right now? We will discuss that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast. Can I tease ahead that Seth's going to be on the mixtape today, Figgy? All right.
Yeah.
Figgy was just in here. Seth Payne, guest on the Figgy mixtape segment today on In the Loop.
Just bringing back an old segment that we used to do where Seth interprets rap lyrics. It was wildly popular with 10% of our audience, despised by 90%. But
test it out today. That was a long time ago. Maybe it's a different appetite today. You never know. You never know. I will be listening. I know, because I love the mixtape. I love the Figgy mixtape. All right, you can text the show, 713-572-4610. Ben Solak writes for ESPN.com, covers football. He's got 100 days to the NFL. Ooh, is it? We're 100 days to the 2025 NFL season. Things to know and predictions. Wow, this isn't 100 days to training camp. This is 100 days to the start of the season. You can practically see it from here.
That's right.
Yeah. It's good, man. I can't wait. He's got 10 names to know. So he's got 100 things. First category is 10 names to know. And you page down, and pretty quickly, in a 32-team league, you get to a Houston Texan, three names in. Nick Caley, offensive coordinator, one of the names to know this coming season. That makes a lot of sense. What held the Texans back from maybe getting further than they did last year was undoubtedly the offense of this football team. Caley is one of the more important guys. Caley is one of the guys, I think Caley and Cole Popovich collectively are two guys that non-players that might shape the AFC playoff race as much as anybody. Here's what Solak says. I'm always hesitant about later branches plucked off coaching trees. The first few Sean McVay assistants, probably have the goods. But the fourth, fifth, and sixth options were probably in the back of the line for a reason. But Caley, who spent the last 2 years in the McVay incubator, was a longtime offensive coach for the Patriots before joining the Rams. So he isn't really a continuing chip off a chip of the block. No offense was held back more by coaching errors last season than Houston's unit. If Kaylee is even league average as a year one play caller, expect the Texans to finally deliver on their 2024 last year's preseason hype.
Okay, that's the part there at the end is something that he and I are in agreement with. It's that just by being an average offensive coordinator, I think he'll be better than Bobby Slowick was. It wasn't just the offensive line. It was gross incompetence in every position group at times on the field. And in a way that everything was so disjointed that things just they were not operating up to snuff.
No.
So if Kaylee is an average offensive coordinator, I think they have the talent on offense to be able to be an above average offense. And hopefully Kaylee is more than that. So I think he hit the nail on the head there. As far as the coaching lineage goes, yeah, and Solak addresses this, but it does not like the classic, hey, let's pluck a coach off this tree. And because guys have done well there, or I like that offense, that tends to lose its power over time because teams are just randomly, you know, like, I got to get a McVay guy. This doesn't really feel like that because I think the thing that probably superseded anything was Caserio's previous relationship with Nick Kaylee.
I agree.
And I don't think that this was simply, hey, we got to go get a McVay guy. It was, hey, this is Nick Kaylee. This is what we like about him. This is what we know about him. This is what we don't know about him. And that he also spent more time in New England than he did with Sean McVay. So yeah. You can't really put him on a coaching tree.
No, I agree.
Although if I had to, I would go the McVay tree over the Belichick tree.
The Belichick tree right now, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
And Kaylee, by the way, is going to meet with the media on Friday this week. So Texans OTAs start back up tomorrow. And D'Amico Ryan is going to meet with the media tomorrow, and some players will as well. All right, one of the next items that that Ben Solak has in here, he has 9 interesting schedule features. And page down here, and there's just, you know, there's a handful of games he's got, and he's got little blurbs on them. Oh, look, it's the Jags and the Texans in week 3 in Jacksonville. And Solak said, I didn't realize this until I saw Jags reporter Michael DiRocco's note in our full schedule preview. The Jags and the Texans haven't played since the Azeez Al-Shaire hit that ended Trevor Lawrence's season and incited a bench-clearing brawl. Well, they'll play in week 3.
All right. Listen, Ben.
Expect some pregame shenanigans and first drive tone setting.
First drive tone setting. I like that.
I do too.
I say we send in a goon in the first series. 53rd man on the roster. I don't care if he's even a defensive player. Send him out there to just go hell-bent for leather across the line of scrimmage no matter what.
I look at this the other way. Do you think what he's saying there is that Jacksonville sends somebody after Azeez Al-Shaire on the first drive?
No, because it's hard to go after a linebacker.
But I agree with you, but I'm like, maybe that's what he thinks could happen. Pre-game shenanigans is good. I could see that happening. You know, just you're out there
stomping on a logo or something.
Stomping on a logo. They walk through our warm-up line, something like that.
Ooh,
we need that, man. Like these rivalries in this AFC South need a little walking through people's stretching lines going on.
Listen, though, I got a news for Ben Solak. You're not just a cute little blogger anymore, okay? You're at ESPN, which means that now we hold you to a higher standard. For one, no, Azeez Al-Shaire did not send Trevor Lawrence to IR. His shoulder injury sent him to IR. He was up. Trevor Lawrence was playing like dog doo-doo in that game already because his shoulder was all banged up. Yeah. He went to IR with a shoulder injury, not the concussion that Azeez Al-Shaire gave him.
Yeah, man.
I keep seeing this printed out almost that Azeez Al-Shaire ended Trevor Lawrence this season. Azeez Al-Shaire should be suspended as long as Trevor Lawrence is out of football. No, it was his shoulder.
Ben Solak.
You lying SOB.
Ben Solak, propaganda spreader. That's what he is. It's anti-Azeez Al-Shaire propaganda is what he's putting out there. That is fun, though, man. Like, week 3, boom, we get it. Same at the scene of the crime in Jacksonville. God, I hope that game has that type of juice. If we get some pregame shenanigans, that would be fun. Because you know what? You know who does the pregame show? Me and you. If we get shenanigans during the pregame.
I think, honestly, if I had to guess, I'm guessing a lot of Jaguars players are tired of Trevor Lawrence's BS. And
all the losing.
Like, man, the cameras are off. Like, that dude, what is he thinking sliding that late? That was dumb.
Yeah.
Like, that's on him.
Yeah.
That's on you and nobody else. It wasn't the offensive lineman's fault that he slid as late as he did.
11 jobs with question marks. Some of them are up for grabs. Others are hot seats. First couple are interesting before we get to the one that has the Texans. Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins head coach, who was all the rage when he was winning games early on. Like, his laid-back style with all the funny little jokes was really cool until they proved that they're just a different version of the Dolphins. They haven't won a playoff game this century yet as a franchise. Bryce Young, question mark. That's funny because we saw an article earlier today that had him maybe getting a second contract. But I think he's closer to question mark than second contract right now for sure. Texans wide receiver 2. All right, this is interesting. Biggest question marks. I don't know that this is a big question mark for me, but let me read what Ben says and see what you think about this, Seth. Entering last season, the Texans' target hierarchy was clear. Nico Collins, then Tank Dell, then Stephon Diggs, then Dalton Schultz. See, I don't even know if I agree with that. I think Diggs clearly was ahead of Dell in that pecking order. Anyways, continuing. Entering this season, it's anything but clear. Collins and Schultz are still around, but Diggs joined the Patriots, and Dell's major knee injury leaves both wide receiver 2 and wide receiver 3 up for grabs. For the two open battles, the Texans drafted two rookies, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll. They'll compete with Christian Kirk for a suddenly large pile of targets. Houston desperately needs to be able to punish teams for double covering Nico Collins and must hit on one of those rookies or see a big post-injury resurgence from Kirk to pull it off.
Yeah.
So is this as big a question mark as he thinks?
No, because wide receiver 2 is a stupid notion. Like, it's that's just comes from fantasy circles more so than anything else.
Definitely.
So from a fantasy perspective, yeah, it matters. But from the team's perspective, they don't give a single damn.
Yeah.
Like, it's just it really is. Like, the notion that somehow teams are sitting around and trying to figure out, like, where do we slot this? Is he our WR2? No, this guy's our WR2. That's not the way it works.
Yeah.
Who do you think, for fantasy purposes?
Sure.
If I had to, I would say I would probably bet Christian Kirk, just because if you want a veteran that can offset it for this season,
yeah.
Christian Kirk. I think Jalen Knoll might take a little time to get his feet about him. Jaden Higgins is going to be used, but he's still a raw rookie and you just can't predict it. So Christian Kirk is the most reliable there, but it could be any one of them.
Yeah, yeah. I would definitely stash at least one of the rookies at the back end of my roster, if for no other reason, as like a handcuff to the veteran guys. You know, like, if Nico Collins goes out, which he has every year for at least a few games, that's going to open up some targets for some of these guys. You know, especially if I had Nico Collins on my roster, I would stash Jaden Higgins, depending on how big my roster is allowed to be. I would stash Jaden Higgins there just because he might be able to get some of those similar type of patterns and catches as Nico Collins. But yeah, I that didn't feel like as big a question the way you're talking about it, like fantasy wise. I'm like, no, I feel like Christian Kirk, if I have to bet on one of these three guys to get 70 catches this year, I'm going to bet on Christian Kirk way before I bet on two rookies. You know what I mean?
And I think that they'll probably emphasize the quick game more than Bobby Slowick did and get it going early and often. And that'd involve a heavy dosage of the veteran wide receiver that is probably going to, you know, he's got a lead on developing a rapport with CJ.
Yep. Last one here. This is, he has 14 intrusive thoughts. Okay, this I think is when we get Ben Solak really on our side here. The Texans have made consecutive AFC divisional rounds, but we don't talk about them like we talk about the Ravens or Bills. I think that's wrong. The Texans defense can get burned in its aggressive style. See all games against Lamar Jackson. But over the past two seasons, it's shown up in key postseason moments and against top opponents more often than not. The Texans' offense disappointed last season, but the potential for an immediate bounce back is there under a new coaching staff. ESPN Bet has the Texans with the 6 best odds to win the AFC. They're behind the Bengals and the Chargers, which doesn't reflect the reality of those three teams over the past few seasons. I am buying Houston. That is true. They beat the Bengals CJ's rookie year in Cincinnati. They beat the Chargers, drubbed the Chargers in the playoffs last year. Thank you, Ben. That does not reflect reality.
Oh. But the defense 100% does need to get rid of some of those big play mistakes. They were just, that was what they were bad at last year. They were top 5 in so many categories, like TFLs, sacks, interceptions, all of the big plays. It's preventing, it's big defensive plays, but they didn't do a good job of preventing the big offensive plays. It wasn't just a matter of, oh, the offense is the offense isn't helping him out. So they're like, no, there were some very avoidable errors made on some of those deep touchdown passes.
Avoidable is key. Of all those statistics that we're talking about here, you know, turnover margin, EPA, all the, you know, all the various things, yards allowed, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Even points. I feel like the easiest thing to fix is giving up big plays, because that's a discipline thing, you know?
Like, well, it's a discipline thing, but it also, like when he said the aggressive style of the defense, it's not in play calling. It's not like they blitz a bunch as a team, but I think in the mindset mentality of just coming up and attacking things in front of you, there's just you got to learn that little bit of discretion as a defensive backfield. And then the tackling overall, the very fundamental thing is that they were bad tacklers. Like they just, to a level inexcusable in the modern NFL. You can talk about how they don't practice the pads on or anything. Yeah, neither do the other 31 teams in the NFL, and there's teams that are tackling better than they are, and that's just a matter of focus and emphasis throughout the season.
All right, we get it tonight. The biggest marquee thing going on in Houston sports these days is happening tonight. We'll discuss that. We'll mix in a little Rockets as well as we wrap up the show. Final segment coming up. We'll find out what In the Loop's got going on, question of the day and whatnot. We'll do all that coming up next. All right, we get a Hunter Brown bounce back start tonight. If I'm power ranking things I want to watch on the Houston sports landscape right now, a Hunter Brown start with the Astros. Not the last start notwithstanding. I'm not penalizing him for giving up three home runs in a ballpark where it seems like every home run surprises everybody. Like, okay, there's a fly ball to right field. Cam Smith camped underneath it. He's going back. Now he's at the wall. Huh. Okay. Well, that thing just landed in the stands. Wow.
You know, when you go to a baseball game, normally you get annoyed at the people that are like have a big fan reaction when clearly the outfielders are set up 20 feet in front of the wall just waiting for the ball to come down.
Yeah.
You couldn't give that advice to a new baseball fan in that stadium. Like, just watch the outfielders. I'm like, the outfielders aren't telling me anything. They're dumber than I am.
They don't know. They don't know themselves. Yeah. So we get Hunter tonight. I am highly confident in a bounce back. I mean, he's going against the A's, which is, you know, they're not great.
Good bounce back team.
Yeah, it's a good team to get well against right now. The A's have not been playing well, so yes, I am big confident in a Hunter Brown bounce back tonight.
What did they've talked about this on the broadcast, and I can't remember what it's settled in on. Is they're not calling them the Sacramento A's, right? They're just calling them
the A's.
They're the A's. They're just not supposed to say Las Vegas or Oakland or anything.
Nothing. Okay. They have no geographic affiliation. I'm looking at the standings right now, and it just says, where are they? Yeah, it just says Athletics. That's all it says. They're just the Athletics. That's it. They're an orphan team with no home. Their logo is Little Orphan Annie.
Are they going to change the name at all? Has there been discussion about that? Are they going to say the Athletics 100% for certain?
I'm guessing so. I don't know is the answer. I'm assuming so because we haven't heard otherwise. I would. I think it's a cool uniform. I think it's a good name. It does have brand appeal. Like they haven't been great the last few years because they've been so poorly owned. I would say, you know, the owner is not great. But he is going to get a nice new ballpark in Vegas at some point. But I think that I've always loved the A's uniforms. That color combo, the green and the gold, and so I wouldn't change a thing. Just obviously the city they're going to be in is
they don't change names in baseball nearly as much as they do in other sports. And when they do, I mean the Guardians, it was because of the
Native American felt
politically incorrect. And then the Rays dropping Devil Rays was all right, guys. We're just
I forgot about
you're
that.
Just you don't have to cave to everybody that tries to it's like those are the only notable ones in recent memory that I can remember.
That I can think of in baseball. Yeah, those are the only
for
ones.
For changing cities, yeah. A team that's changed, I mean, back in the day, the Dodgers used to be the Trolley Dodgers. They changed names all the time, but it hasn't happened in a while.
Did they really? They used to be the Trolley Dodgers, huh?
Yes, they were the Trolley Dodgers. That's how they got their name.
I did not know that.
It's quite virile, yes.
All the way back when they were in Brooklyn, huh? They were the Trolley Dodgers. Okay, there you go. Text message, can't imagine any NFL team could be considered a have not, maybe a have less, but the TV money alone is crazy and they don't have to pay full price for their venues. That's fair. We're just using have and have not as sort of a colloquial phrase here.
Well, no, but there's a different, you're right. It's obviously they're not have nots, but in comparison to other franchises.
Yeah.
So yes, there are things that limit it in football compared to other sports, but there are still cash rich teams versus teams that aren't as cash rich. Yeah. So it allows them to operate more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm not sitting here begging you to start up a GoFundMe for the Jaguars or something. Yeah. They all do quite well financially.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of just evening it out even more.
Any word on Nick Chubb or J.K. Dobbins joining the Texans? I've seen nothing about Nick Chubb other than a couple articles saying, hey, that might make sense for the Texans. There was a rumor over the weekend about the Texans talking to J.K. Dobbins, but I didn't recognize the person who was putting it out there, and it wasn't corroborated by a second source who I would trust. I'd be fine with it. I mean, we're down to the bin of running backs here where it's going to be $2 or $3 million for a year. And so if it doesn't work, then you just cut him and let him go, you know?
I think that it's one of those things kind of like last year. Hey, how come the Texans aren't addressing the safety position? How come they're not addressing the safety position? Well, like you drafted safety pretty damn high.
Yeah.
And he ended up playing a bunch for you. This might be a lesser version of, hey, Woody Marks is the change up that we're hoping to have. And maybe we believe in Damian Pierce more so than others at this point. But like there's nothing about J.K. Dobbins or Nick Chubb with his injury history that makes me feel like, yeah, this is what the Texans have to do to feel really good about their defensive backfield.
Yeah.
I'm just as comfortable with playing it out the way it is than going out and getting somebody else that's either had a big name but subpar performance or a big name and boatloads of injuries, which both of those guys are.
Yep. Several people pointing out that the Montreal Expos became the Washington Nationals when they moved there back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
They were the Expos, now the Nationals there. So we get Knicks Pacers tonight as well. So this is a good TV night. We get to see if the Pacers bounce back from blowing that game against the Knicks. I've been watching these playoffs set through the prism of the Rockets, just like wondering, okay, the big story with the Rockets right now is, do they make a move for a big superstar? And is Jalen Green part of that move? And I'm trying to look at these four teams that are in the conference finals and going, okay, what did these guys do? Like, what it? And the fact of the matter was that the Thunder were on the other end of a huge trade for a superstar, and they're thriving now. You know, they picked up the Jalen Green in that trade and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They traded Paul George, you know, they were the ones shipping a superstar out, got back a bunch of draft capital and got back Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and he might have been the beginning of what could be a dynasty in Oklahoma City. Tyrese Halliburton was a guy who started out in Sacramento, and now he's in Indiana, and he's the catalyst of their team, a team that could get to the NBA Finals. Jalen Brunson's on his second team. These are all the best players on these teams that are around right now. So I'm trying to – I'm fine with trading Jalen Green, but I'm looking at these other teams who are all built around guys who are on their second run with some team for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And they're all players who took big leaps forward after a change of scenery. I don't want that to happen with Jalen Green. Like, if Jalen Green gets traded, I want the Rockets to be right about this, you know?
You need it to be that, okay, yes, this is what we feel his ceiling is, and he wasn't going to get much beyond that.
Yeah.
I remember thinking Chris Paul was way too old for the NBA anymore, and then, yeah.
And then he gets Phoenix to the finals.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I'm watching this, watching these conference finals here in the NBA. So we get the Pacers and the Knicks tonight, and we'll see if the Pacers can bounce back. I hope for the sake of humanity that the Pacers are able to bounce back from that performance a couple of days ago.
They let their guard down in a raucous environment, and they probably learned a lesson from it, Sean. That's what they'll tell at the end of this series. Boy, they learned a lesson about handling success when they're in that home environment. They had a 20-point lead in the second quarter, and then they just they got a little too comfortable.
I hope Rick Carlisle gave them the Irv Favre treatment, told them how horrible they were at their sport, you're terrible. And and try to get the best out of them doing it that way. If you're wondering why I'm bringing up Irv Favre, it's because Seth and I both watched the Brett Favre documentary yesterday.
Their self-esteem is too high.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They're just pleasant home lives growing up and everything. Sometimes as a coach, you got to inject the dysfunction into their lives.
Smack them down. Like, let the Knicks smack them down, and then you smack them again. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's called parenting. All right, John Lopez, Reggie Atatula, they are here. Gentlemen, it's good to see you.
What's happening?
Nice to see you as well, brother.
Thank you. You guys had a nice relaxing day yesterday?
Terrific. Like, more relaxing than I can remember.
Good.
Like, I did nothing.
Good. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Little OG sauce on the grill?
A little OG sauce. Made some venison carne guisada, which was excellent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Venison, huh?
Yeah. It was okay. Really good. Really good. Yeah, a lot of cooking.
Yeah.
Fancy for deer.
Yeah. No, I. Thanks, Reggie.
You're welcome.
Did you do anything fun yesterday?
Buddy, I cleaned the apartment and got my space better. Like, that sounds like the answer is no but big. In a way, like, I actually got my space kind of clear. Like, as I was doing it, I felt like I am doing the boring thing. And then in the evening, as I'm watching basketball, I'm like, I feel great.
Reaping
right
the benefits, the mental, psychological benefits of a clean space.
Make your bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for every
day. Getting the oil, when you get the oil changed in your car and you're driving away and you're like, I am a man in command of my, I do things the right way, in the right order, when they're supposed to be done.
Yes.
That's what I do.
Did you see how I handed that guy my credit card to have him change my oil right there? That's real man kind of
stuff. Because I care about proper maintenance of expensive things.
And I told him, do not change that air filter. I do that by myself.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's where I'm out over my
No, really? The air filter? Is the easy thing to do.
Air filter in my car?
Yeah, cabin air filter?
I don't do anything under the hood. No, I leave that
that's
to
not
the
even,
experts.
Even under the hood. That's in the cabin, buddy.
That's
Yeah, you can save yourself a good like $25.
Sean, if you look at Sean's approach towards life, you could easily drop him down into like the 1700s in an English palace somewhere, and he would just slip right into it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, feel weird about having all these people do my bidding? Of course not. You, sir. Wipe my nose.
That's right.
You, sir. I'll be making a bowel movement in 3 hours hence.
Yeah. That's
be
right.
There.
When people tell me, like, you wouldn't survive in the 1700s. I'm like, as royalty, I would. I would do just
fine. It's the Nate Bargatze. Like, if I go back in time, I wouldn't actually be able to benefit off of it. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't know how anything works in modern times.
That's it, man. That's it. So what's the question of the day?
Well, the question of the day today is, what's the biggest move? Not necessarily superstition, but the biggest the biggest move you've made, the biggest drastic move you've made, trying to change your luck or fortune,
trying to recalibrate things.
Like
you're talking about, like Brett Favre,
like Christian Walker
picture,
like
Christian. Oh, wow! I mean, it was a big swing.
This woman's not responding to my text messages or voicemails, so I guess the next step is to just go ahead and go full frontal. That's what the
which, to be fair, fits his footballing personality.
Gunslinger.
Just
gunslinger.
Hail Mary?
Yeah.
Hail Mary?
Yeah.
Hail Mary.
Sure, why not? No, you're right. You're right.
That actually fits.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I got Mike. Well, first of all, Crosstalk sponsored by D&M Auto Lease.
Yeah.
It's what we're doing right now. Mine was probably, like, career-wise, mine was my first couple years in radio where I felt like I was improving, but I took a look around and I'm like, I'm never going to make the money I need to make where I was. B, I always wanted to get over here because it's 6'10". I literally sat down and wrote down a list of all the things I needed to do to get over to 6'10". It was like 10 points. It was, and I still have it somewhere, but I wrote it down. I don't do that a ton, but when it's like when the chips are down or like when I've got to figure this thing out, I'll write. I'm way better. I mean, look at this. This is me. Like, I'm writing things down. But I wrote down the 10 things that I needed to do to get over to Sports Radio 610. Now it took 5 more years to do that.
Yeah.
But I always had that piece of paper with me and made sure I was doing those things.
That's pretty bold. Pretty good.
It didn't change my luck right away, but I don't think I would have. Had I not sat down and thought that through, I don't think I would be here. It would have taken me longer probably.
I don't know about you, Seth. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like me, I always wanted to be a writer or broadcaster, whatever.
Yeah.
So I got my first big break to move to San Antonio, and they told me I was going to be a writer. And they put me on the copy desk, on the editing desk. And the competing newspaper had a job opening for a college football writer. And I called them while I was working at the other newspaper.
Oh, really?
And said, hey, I know you guys were thinking about this, blah, blah, blah. And they hired me almost via phone.
Wow.
While I was still working at the
probably liked your go-getterness. What are you doing right now? My other job.
Yeah.
Well, that's... My other job. I don't know. Mine was, it wasn't like this was a risky or bold move to take, but it was, I guess, for me, mentally it was, but it ended up having the biggest effect was after my fourth season when I was with the Jaguars, they drafted Marcus Stroud, who is a first round defensive tackle, just a physical freak of nature. And I was like, okay, well, I gotta get better. I work hard, but I gotta get better. And I found a sports psychologist in Orlando who works with a lot of professional tennis players and golfers. And I was like, I'm gonna go do it. I'm skeptical as hell, but I'm gonna go do it. And it ended up being a huge difference for me. It made a huge difference for me. Like, I became a completely different player that year, partly because of the competition from Stroud, but also my whole approach the way I prepared and played and everything, like how I handled setbacks and all that. It just changed completely.
How'd you find that guy? Did someone recommend him to
you? I read an article. It was in an article in an In-Flight magazine about Jim
No
Lair,
way. Oh, my God. The In-Flight magazine had something useful. Wow.
The sharper image therapist.
Yeah. And then Seth went and played a crossword and ordered 6 vodka tonics.
As soon as I sobered up, I called that sports psychologist. Said, are you guys an inpatient program?
All right, so Seth,
I be allowed to leave on the weekend?
One thing I will ask, though, because I think one of the best parts about your friends going through therapy is getting secondhand therapy. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you took from that you would offer forward as advice for others?
The biggest two things that immediately I took is that I knew accepting coaching the proper way when you accept criticism, how do you frame it, and not get emotional about it. So that was huge for me. And then the other big one was after bad plays, resetting yourself. And you'll see tennis players do this a lot. They'll have a ritual or routine, or golfers between whether it's a bad shot or a good shot, they'll pluck the strings on your racket, say a mantra to yourself, something like that, but kind of genuinely leaving the previous play behind you and going on to the next play. That was big for me.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
That is big. I think.
And then third was just simply reminding myself to have fun. Just constantly, even if it's miserable and hot out and you're dehydrated or whatever, you got to remember to have fun.
You're playing football. Yeah, for sure. This comes from Christian Walker, right? So superstitions.
Yes. Changed his locker.
Okay. Yeah.
Pulled up his socks.
Shaved his mustache. Yeah. I'm I was watching the game. Okay. When I saw that article, I'm like, all right, I'm not crazy. Does Christian Walker have a mustache all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he didn't have it anymore. Christian Walker does not stick with a superstition very long. This mustache ain't working.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's in desperate measures territory at this point, so I don't blame him for doing that. I am amazed, though, that, and I don't think that Chandler Rome put this in the piece to, in any way say that this is a part of it. However, How the hell did he have Jose Abreu's locker to start with?
Thank you. That's exactly what I was going to say. Who put him in Jose Abreu's locker? What person? I don't want to name call because it might be somebody I like, but what person who may not be stupid but had a stupid moment put Christian Walker in Jose Abreu? Who puts anybody in that? That is a locker that you burn to the ground and put up plywood.
Physically take the locker out of it?
You burn that locker.
And is anyone in the locker now?
That's a great question.
Ooh, we have to be able to do the scientific method on whether this stink track continues. Yeah. Like in Seinfeld where, the car just continued to carry the stink.
Yeah. Go follow the bee.
Yeah. He needs an incense stick in that locker.
Yes.
Yeah, some sage or something.
Needs something. Amy's listening. She said,
hi, Amy.
She said my turning point moment was getting married to her.
So there it is. Fumbled not throwing that one up there.
That was pretty. Things have been good. Things have been good since that happened. That is true. All right, Sport Crosstalk, sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. How good is it? I got that right today, twice. Indeed, Crosstalk, sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. All right, we're done. We're out of time. Seth, antibodies to you. I'll see you tomorrow, my friend.
Antibodies and bold endeavors to you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Seth will be making a guest appearance on the mixtape today here on In the Loop.
Oh, wow.
At 1:30. Yeah, so looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. That'll be good.